Take a deep breath, everybody. Signing day is over. You can stop reading all the blogs and checking out your local newspapers and seeing who your favorite team signed. We have it all. So here we are on Thursday, February 2nd, after a wild Wednesday. Adam Azer and Brian Fisher, our recruiting expert. Brian, you sat in studio for 8 straight hours with Bruce Feldman yesterday, and at the end of it, you were like, let's do 8 more.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, it only happens once a year, and we got to wait 365 days for the class of 2013. But recruiting
never stops.
It never stops. That is true. It is day in and day out. I never get a break, and I'm going to need a vacation at some point.
Yeah, I'm not sure. When would you take that? Like April?
We'll see. Okay. We'll see.
Oh, he's also our Pac-12 Eye on College Football blogger. So Brian's a busy man. We're going to be looking at the CBS Sports Top 25 recruiting classes from yesterday. Not just from yesterday. I mean, the thing about signing day is a lot. We know a lot before signing day. Then we have some surprises. So how would you rate yesterday's signing day on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of craziness?
You know what? It actually, outside of a couple things, it wasn't too crazy. You know, in past years, we saw some crazy flips and guys moving in and moving out and changing conferences and last-minute things, but we really didn't have that over on signing day this year. I think the biggest change was Deontay Greenberry surprisingly going to Houston. You just don't see, you know, five-star guys like that head to a program like Houston, but especially from Notre Dame, but terrific pickup for the Cougars and going to be interesting to see how that all works out going forward. I know Brian Kelly was none too happy on learning he had signed elsewhere.
I know you talked to Houston's coach yesterday. Did you ask him about that commitment?
A little bit. I mean, it had just gone official right before we went on with him, but you know, he mentioned that one of the assistants had developed a good relationship with him from Arizona State and, you know, got him to visit. And, you know, he said, Tony Levine, the Houston coach, said, you know, if they can get guys on campus, and this is true for any program, if they can get guys on campus, they feel like they have a shot. And they had an official visit with Greenberry last weekend and ended up signing him. And a huge coup for that program.
Right. Tony Levine, not a brand name yet, but that was a great get for him. So here's my issue with signing day and with recruiting. I just kind of feel like everybody's cheating. What do you think? Now, you're a big recruiting guy and you're into it. I'm not really as into recruiting. But I just think like the phone calls that they're allowed to make, I have a feeling a lot of coaches go over those limits. Just little things like that. Maybe it's not huge stuff and maybe it's a fairly even playing field. But I just kind of feel like it's kind of cheating out there.
Oh, I don't doubt that there's cheating, and you know what? I cover NCAA issues, so I also,
that's true.
I see it all the time, and you know, it was funny. You mentioned cheating. I felt like it was buried in the middle of everything, but there was a Nebraska infractions case that came out. Of course, they released it on signing day, so they kind of buried,
really?
You know, what happened there. But you know, that wasn't a big thing. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely some cutting of corners, and with technology and burner phones and all that, there's definitely some iffy things going on.
What
out
is a
there.
Burner phone?
Oh, you don't know about the burner phones?
No,
you know, you go down to Walmart, you buy 20 phones that are just the disposable
things.
Phone. It's like the wire. It's
I've,
turning
I've
into the
bought
wire.
A burner phone before, I guess, but
I'm
not.
I'm not going to ask what it's for. But
I had a friend in town from England, and we just had to get a phone. So, but yeah, no, we didn't call any recruits. Don't worry about it. Now, Georgia Tech head coach Paul Johnson, he criticized oversigning. And you see some of these classes are very big. Miami, 33 commitments. I believe that was the most in the FBS. Is that, do you know off the top of your head?
I think so. I mean, it depends. Some of the academies, you know, they have some different rules with the amount of guys that they can bring in. So they technically probably had the biggest class, but, you know, I would say so.
Right. Anyway, you're allowed 85 scholarship players. So this is what Georgia Tech head coach Paul Johnson said. 4 times 25, and you try to stay around 25 commits. So, you know, I actually have another question for you before we get into this quote. It's conference by conference, right, in terms of the amount of recruits you're allowed to bring in, and a few of them are at 25 per class?
The SEC is at 25. That was the new rule passed last December, I believe. It was actually earlier than that. But, I mean, it was in effect for this class. You can only sign 25. Obviously, that's not counting guys that are, you know, enroll early. But, you know, I think going forward, it's going to be NCAA-wide. So this is really the last year that schools could oversign.
Okay.
You know, you can do some roster management things, but with multi-year scholarships and 25-man limits in February, it's going to be a different game going forward, and I think they've really clamped down on the issues.
So he said, Paul Johnson, 4 times 25 is 100, not 85. I'm not going to compromise what I think is the right way to do it. I'd much rather be one or two short and have a scholarship for a walk-on than be three over and run somebody off.
Well, you know, I think there is some issues. You know, I think even Alabama was one of them. I mean, they wanted to grayshirt a few kids, and, you know, I think that drew the most attention. Obviously, they were the top class this year, so anybody that doesn't sign with them is going to be an issue. But, you know, I think he's – look, the issue was taken up by the presidents, and it was gone NCAA-wide. They understand what some of these coaches were doing, and I think it's been taken care of. You know, you're still going to get a few kids that do slip through the cracks, but I think for the most part, kids know if they have a spot or not now, and that's the best thing going forward.
Do you think things are going to change a lot next year?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, like Alabama did and some of the other SEC schools that were going right at 25 this February, you know, there definitely is going to be some number crunching. You have to be careful in not signing an extra guy. I mean, it's like, you know, USC with their scholarship restrictions, they had to hit either the exact number or go over, under it. They couldn't sign another guy over it. And, you know, that's how it's going to be. It's going to be very delicate. And I'm going to be interested to see what happens if someone gets a surprise 26th signee and how they handle that. So it's I think it's been taken care of on a bigger picture scale, but it's going to be interesting when things roll around nationally next year.
I really should have read the top 10 earlier in the show. I apologize to everyone. Alabama 1, Texas 2, Ohio State 3, Michigan 4, Florida 5, Florida State 6, Miami 7, Oklahoma 8, USC 9, and Stanford 10. We'll talk a lot more about these teams. When I see 28 next to Alabama, Brian, what does that mean? That they're going to try to put three of those guys off until January?
Well, no, they took a lot of early enrollees in this class, okay. And I think they had to in terms of their depth and their numbers. I mean, that was the one thing that I think Nick Saban really emphasized was, you know what, we're losing so many guys, whether it be upperclassmen that are graduating or going to the NFL, that they needed to get some guys in there and in spring and get them used to things. And I mean, obviously the top class in the nation, they got some great guys coming in, and you know, it says 28. Miami was bringing in 33, but they have like 9 signees coming in early. It's just you know, you can look at the numbers differently, but bottom line, you can only have 25 if you're an SEC school signed in February.
And just to reference that, if you bring guys in early, have early enrollees, they count towards last year's class.
Yes.
Top recruit, Doriel Green Beckham, wide receiver, huge wide receiver. He picked in-state Missouri over Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. And one of the reasons why he wanted to stay close to home, he has a 15-year-old brother who has cancer. I want to combine Missouri and this signing with Texas A&M, who is 14th, according to the CBS Sports rankings. So you got Missouri getting this major catch. You got Texas A&M having a really strong class. How much does the move to the SEC help those two schools?
I think it helped specifically with Missouri and Doriel Green Beckham. I think
he was
a kid that wanted to play in the SEC and remain close to home. Well, the two schools that fit that criteria, Missouri and Arkansas. He has some family issues. His brother has leukemia. It looks like he's going to be okay, but he's still going through treatment. Wanted to be close to his family so they could see him play. And you know, I think it the combination of those factors led them to land him. I think A&M in particular, it probably helped more. They can create that separation between Oklahoma and Texas Tech and Baylor and Texas itself. You know, they landed a Texas former Texas commitment, so it's I think it helps Texas A&M probably more than Missouri, but no doubt about it, it's a great selling point for both universities, and they definitely used it. I talked with Kevin Sumlin a few weeks before signing day, and he was like, yeah, he showed me a shirt, you know, had a big SEC logo on his polo. So they're definitely selling it, and I think it'll help more going forward in the class of 2013, 2014 going on from there.
So CBS Sports has Alabama number 1 with Texas 2. Same number 1 and 2 for Rivals.com. Scout.com has Texas 1 and Alabama 2, so they reversed it there. ESPN.com, Alabama 1, FSU 2, Texas 3rd. In your mind, which team, which school has the best class?
I'm going to go with Alabama. I think they fill their needs, and I think just the amount of quality players they're bringing in. A guy like Landon Collins can play early. He's a guy that is at a position of need. I mean, they need secondary guys. They're losing a lot of guys like Mark Barron going to the NFL, and you know, look, Nick Saban is known for getting any guy that he wants, and Alabama has become the it program right now. If you're a top 100 guy and Alabama's coming after you hard, chances are you really don't say no. So I think Alabama's the top class in terms of quality players and quantity of players. They filled up to the max because they had to, and you know, I would definitely go Alabama, Texas. I think 3 through maybe 9 are kind of up in the air, and you can move those as needed. I think it depends on how each fits. I mean, you could make a case for Florida State with that defensive line class that they're bringing in. You could make a case for Ohio State at number 3. You can make a case for Miami with as many guys as they're bringing in and as many guys that are going to have to play early because of their scholarship situation and because of their depth chart. You know, I think it's a very solid year up in the top 10.
Now, Florida State, I'm glad you mentioned them. I do want to talk about Florida State. So they lost defensive tackle Dante Fowler to Florida, and then Jimbo Fisher made some comments later in the day about being afraid of the depth chart, probably directed at Fowler. Maybe he got scared by, as you mentioned, the great defensive lineman that Florida State brought in. They got Eddie Goldman on Wednesday, and Mario Edwards, number 4 overall player in the nation, according to Tom Lemming. So he's a defensive end. He's coming to Florida State. Now, as of now, they don't have their quarterback, Jameis Winston, and it's pretty much an inevitability that he will sign with Florida State. But you talked about it last week when I had you on the phone. He might play pro baseball, so we don't know if he'll ever actually suit up for the Seminoles. Anyway, it's like Jimbo Fisher is just the man. Year after year, they're bringing in these unbelievable players.
Yeah, I mean, you look up in the top 25, and you can see a ton of Nick Saban's former assistants in there, and you know, Jimbo Fisher and Will Muschamp doing a terrific job recruiting. They're going to have to turn that into wins next year, especially for both programs coming off of the disappointing seasons that they had. But I think Florida State, I think it might have been the best defensive line class in the nation. I think you can argue with Ohio State and have a legitimate one with the guys they brought in, but speedy guys, guys that can make an impact early on, and I think it's just, you know, bottom line that they get their quarterback that they want. It remains to be seen, like you were saying, that if he ends up playing for them. But
that's the thing, Brian. It's like they were so talented last year, but it was just
and young last year. They were very young, and you
but
know,
on defense they had some experience. At linebacker. They were experienced on the D line. Offensively, they were young. Especially on the O-line.
O-line, yes. I mean, there were some issues there. And they brought in, you know, a JUCO guy and a couple others that could maybe help out with spot duty. But I think bottom line, you know, I think Florida State, Texas, kind of in a similar position where they kind of had disappointing years, you know, so-so years for those programs historically. But bringing in a lot of young talent that could maybe make an impact early on.
Yeah, but here's what I was going to say about Florida State. If Winston, who is arguably the number one quarterback recruit in the nation, if he doesn't play for them, then they might be just exactly what they were last year, where with great talent and an inferior might be a little strong, but a quarterback who's not quite good enough to win the national championship. Now, I'd like to see EJ Manuel with a better offensive line. Maybe he can do something. But this is national championship-level recruiting classes. If they don't have the quarterback to tie it all in, it might just be that. And another thing to kind of segue into is when you spoke to our FSU Rapid reporter yesterday, he said Jimbo Fisher might be on the hot seat if they disappoint this year. So what do you think about that?
I think it'll start to the heat will start to turn up in Tallahassee. I mean, the one thing you got to keep in mind with Florida State last year, I think injuries were a big part of the equation there. I mean, EJ Manuel getting hurt for as many games as you had. I think he's a solid quarterback. I think you can win with him. Can you win a national championship with him? It remains to be seen. I think there are a lot of good pieces on that team, especially at wide wide receiver. Some of those young guys emerged last year, surprisingly. And I think with this class coming in, you know, that they got, Bracy, some other fast guys that can also maybe help out in special teams. I think it's just a solid class that can fill their needs here and there. And you know what? If they don't need a guy, they can always redshirt him and save him for next year when possibly Winston comes in and starts.
The eight-hour show that you did yesterday, filled with interviews. We had players on. We had a lot of coaches on. We had reporters on. My personal favorite interview, and I must admit, I was moderating our chat. I wasn't able to listen intently to everything. But we had George Whitfield on, who's a quarterback guru who has tutored Cam Newton and many other very good quarterbacks. And he coached up Gunnar Kiel, who was a Notre Dame commit after being an Indiana commit and an LSU commit. Now he's supposed to be the savior for Notre Dame. He had some very harsh things to say about Gunnar Kiel. He was extremely honest. This was the best interview I thought we had all day. I loved him. So just kind of take us through what George Whitfield had to say about Kiel and what you thought about it.
Well, I think George was mainly focused on, you know, I think, and I agree with him, that Gunnar Kiel has some issues when he gets some pressure on his face, when he's trying to think too fast, and that sometimes he rushes things, his mechanics break down a little bit, and, he had concerns about the level of competition, and I think those are all valid. But at the end of the day, you know, I've seen Gunnar not only throw in person, but seen his film. I think he's one of the more polished quarterbacks coming out of this class. I think there is an issue with adjusting to the speed. I don't think he would be ready for Notre Dame, to jump in for Notre Dame right away. I think, it's going to be interesting to see him go through a spring ball. He enrolled early so he can get used to things. But you know what? He's a good fit for Brian Kelly's offense. I think he has a strong arm. I think he's smart enough to put it together. I thought that, his senior season, he didn't really like all the pressure. And, I think now that he's committed and he's more comfortable, he's close to home, I think he can relax a little bit and just play. And I think, you can see sometimes his natural abilities kind of take over. And, I think what George was getting at was that, sometimes he thinks too much, and he yeah. doesn't allow him to rely on what he can do. And, I would say Jameis Winston is probably the top quarterback when you're talking about upside. But if you're talking about a pro style guy that can lead your team to 10, 11, 12 wins, I think it would be Gunnar Kiel.
Signing day is also funny because the schools that pick up the big time commits and they get high in the rankings from the four major spots or however many you want to look at. Well, they're obsessed with the star system. They love it. But the schools like Boise State, and we had Chris Peterson on yesterday, they don't seem to care about the stars. They do their own recruiting. And I think it was Gary Patterson of TCU said, I don't even look at that stuff until we're putting out a press release or something like that later, on signing day. So I just want to know, though, you can have that argument, whatever, but why doesn't Boise State do better in the rankings? How come they can't get a lot of big-time recruits? And, you guys mentioned it yesterday that Kellen Moore was not heavily recruited. But I'm thinking it should be time for Boise State to start picking up some blue-chip guys. What's your thoughts? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors. Number one, Boise State waits in the evaluation process. They want to see some guys senior years, and I think they do a fantastic job of picking out those guys that are maybe a little overlooked by some other big-time programs. Look, they're not going to get a guy who's 6'4 and 240 and can run a 4.3, that guy's going to go.
But that's the thing. They should start getting those guys.
Well,
they're an elite program.
They are an elite program.
Is it just because they're in Boise?
Well, I think that's an issue. I mean, obviously, the talent base at home is it's not what it could be. I mean, the education, I think you can make an argument that some other schools offer a better education. I mean, if you're going up against a Stanford for an athlete, all right, well, Stanford can offer a better education, play in a better conference. I think they go up against that, but what they do that they find guys that fit their system that they can develop. A lot of guys there red shirt, or even if they play early, they're kind of brought along slowly. But the bottom line at Boise State, I think, is coaching and evaluation, and they do things there at TCU the same way, better than anybody. And you know what? Nobody really looks at the star system and all that if you're a coach, unless you have, like Gary Patterson was saying, at the end of the day on signing day, because maybe your bonus is tied to it.
Right.
But you know what? These coaches want to look at things themselves. And you know what, we had Matt Lubick on from Duke, and you know, we saw a guy, he was a 6'4" tight end, ran a 4.3 40, and he's given a 2-star rating by somebody, but obviously those coaches loved him. And I think bottom line, it's just a guide, the star system, the evaluations that you're going to get from Max Preps or Rivals or Scout or whatever is just a guide. This is this guy, we saw him a couple times, we like him. And college coaches obviously sometimes have a different opinion, but it's getting better. I think more, Boise State especially had their best recruiting class in recent memory. I think TCU had a phenomenal class. I think they are starting to get more elite athletes, but bottom line is they're starting from a different position than a program like Texas or USC, yeah, or even Washington or Washington State.
I looked a couple years ago. I don't know if it was Scout or Rivals, but I looked at their top probably 100 prospects year by year. And what I found was the top 10 were more or less studs. Were studs more or less everywhere. I mean, they were really good at ranking the top 10 guys. They seemed to be can't miss. Well, there were some exceptions, obviously, but if you got a top 10 player, you more or less always had a very good player. After that, there's a lot of guys you're like, who? I've never heard of that guy. Unless, I'm sure you heard of them. But casual college football fan, be like, I don't remember him at all. So a lot of misses, even amongst the elite 5-star and 4-star guys, right?
Oh, yeah. I think it's getting better, though, and I mentioned a little bit earlier. But, there's more film out there to watch. Games are on TV now. You see guys earlier and earlier, especially with the 7-on-7s and the camps and combines across the country. It's not just Tom Lemming driving around in his car for 20,000 miles and then putting out something in the spring. I mean,
right.
It's a little bit better. It's a little bit broader. And you definitely miss, because you don't know how guys going to translate, how he's going to pick up that system. Maybe another guy comes in behind him that takes his job. I mean, there's a whole bunch of factors that say, all right, well, you totally screwed up in not ranking this guy higher and ranking this guy too high. And you know what? It's the nature of the beast. You're going to miss and you're going to hit on guys like Matt Barkley, who's overall number one, and guys like that. But it's just the nature of the beast.
Okay, let's go through it conference by conference here. You don't have to go too in-depth, but give us winners, and then we'll do losers. But we'll do the Big Six conferences, and then you can do a non-BCS one as well. ACC winners.
Well, Miami, I think, in particular, that they hit their needs in terms of quantity of guys and especially in quality, because they needed a number of big-time guys that can come in right away. They had so many guys leave that were upperclassmen or to the NFL that we talked with Brendan Carroll yesterday a little bit. They hit on just about everybody but about two guys that they really wanted, and that's a remarkable thing, especially for a program given everything that's going on around it, with the NCAA and Shapiro Gate or whatever you want to call it, to bring in a top five, top six class, it was really a great job by Al Golden. And then I think Florida State, another program, a disappointing season last year, but they get some quality, talented guys, and you can see it. They tied for the nation lead with six top 100 guys. So the two Florida schools, they did well in the state of Florida. They also went out of the state for a few guys that I think are good pickups. So I would go with those two programs.
Yeah, and then just to round it out, Clemson's 12th. Virginia Tech is 16th. And Virginia, 25th. That's very impressive. Really, that's a program that seems to be on the rise. How about losers in the ACC?
It's interesting to look at the losers because in the ACC, you got guys or teams like Wake Forest that are going to redshirt a lot of guys, and you really don't know until they get on there. But Wake Forest grabbed a nice quarterback, I thought, in their class. I think losers are always tough to figure out for all these conferences. You got to figure out, all right, well, what's this class really going to project like? And I think outside of a few schools missing on some targets, and I didn't think there were many in the ACC. I think that was the one thing that actually kind of struck me is a lot of these classes are ended up just about where we thought they were. You know, there were not a huge, big time. All right, well this program totally missed out on this one and this guy and this guy and this guy. If I had to pick a specific program, it would probably be Georgia Tech. I think they lost some guys late. They were kind of got taken out of the running for a few other guys, pulled some scholarships, stuff like that. It was a pretty solid year for the ACC, particularly because of the SEC over-signing rule. They got a few extra guys that I think would have gone to the SEC somehow or some way.
Interesting. Big East, winners and losers. Winners first.
Well, Big East, I mean, I think Rutgers, able to keep that recruiting class, given everything that went on with Greg Schiano. I mean, Kyle Flood did a phenomenal job. This would have been, I think, Greg Schiano's best recruiting class. And you know what? Hats off to Kyle Flood, that staff. I think moving quickly to replace him helped tremendously. And you end up with guys like especially the in-state guys. I think Quanzel Lambert, a linebacker, guys like that, just terrific gets. And I think they did a great job. And if you want to get into future Big East programs, I think Boise State also did pretty well.
Okay, Rutgers is the only Big East team in the CBS Sports Top 25. They are 23rd losers in the Big East.
Maybe Syracuse and UConn. I don't think they had solid classes. They had a few guys here and there, but not quality. I think that they filled out their roster. Again, you don't know how to project some of those guys that were maybe a little bit underrated. But they landed one or two guys, but it just wasn't enough quality overall for Syracuse and UConn.
The Big Ten, we haven't really spoken about the Big Ten, but Urban Meyer and Brady Hoke did very well. Urban Meyer, with his first recruiting class at Ohio State, finishes number three in our rankings, and Michigan one spot behind at number four. And additionally, as I scan here through the top 25, is that it for the Big Ten?
Looks yeah, I that think way. So, yeah.
So two teams in the top five and nobody else in the top 25. Okay, winners and losers, go for it.
Well, I'd go Ohio State number one. I mean, obviously, with what Urban Meyer was able to do, I thought, before he was hired, it was not even a top 25 class. I think they had one top 100 type guy and just completely turned recruiting around there.
Why do you think he can do that? What is it about him?
He's relentless, number one. I mean, he knows how to connect to kids. I think he's up front with them a little bit more this time around. I think he's got a big name, and you know what? The record speaks for itself. Two national titles in the toughest league in the country, and he's got a great thing to sell. I mean, Ohio State's a great institution, a historic program. He knows the area. It's a solid talent base in state, and I think he's just taking with things and run, and that's the mark of a true good coach.
Okay, and other thoughts in the Big Ten?
Michigan, I think Brady Hoke brought in a very quality class. They lost a few guys late, but I think they still ended up with what I would think is a top five class in my mind, and I think they are in the rankings at number four. Mm-hmm. So, guys that can play right away. I thought they did pretty well on the offensive line and on defense. Some guys that can fit Greg Madison's system. Wisconsin, it's not a big class at Wisconsin, and they lost one or two guys at the end. But they get their quarterback in Bart Houston. They got guys in Vince Beagle and some others that can play, I think, early on for them. And a very solid effort. Michigan State, maybe not a true winner, but I think they deserve some kudos for what they did. They lost Savon Pittman to Ohio State late, but still a solid class for Mark D'Antonio. It was a pretty decent year. But if 2012 is any indication, it's going to be Ohio State, Michigan, a little bit of space, Wisconsin, Michigan State, and then everybody else.
So, what about Penn State? How would you rate their job on signing day and the whole recruiting process?
They did okay. I would probably give them the loser label. It's just so tough. And I think the reason I really would give them the loser label is Bill O'Brien didn't really take this recruiting thing seriously. I don't think. I mean, obviously he wants to win the Super Bowl this week, but if you want to build a class going forward, you got to take things seriously, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, he didn't take his recruiting test until late. He didn't do any in-home visits. I think guys that wanted to come to Penn State and liked the campus were always going to come. You know, but it's almost like they're going to have to hit a reset button next year.
Yeah, that's very frustrating for their fans, just to see your coach. And I don't blame them. That was part of the deal when they hired him. They knew he was going to stay with the Patriots, but it's tough for the fans. Big 12 time. We've got Texas, obviously did a very good job. They usually have strong recruiting classes. Oklahoma was up there as well in the top 10. They were number 8 overall. Texas A&M is no longer in the Big 12, so they don't count, and that is it for the Big 12. They had two top 10 schools in the CBS Sports Top 25 and nothing else. Winners and losers from the Big 12, Brian.
Well, the obvious suspects, Texas and Oklahoma, and you mentioned them in the top 25, but Texas, they get the best running back in the country in Jonathan Gray, top wideout in the state in Caleb Jones. It was just another reloading year for the Horns, and I think a great job on the elite talent that they got, and I think those guys can play early. And then I think they got some underrated pickups too. Dajay Johnson, a guy they stole from TCU late. Dalton Santos, who used to be committed to Tennessee, very underrated linebacker. I think that they got some solid pieces. Went the JUCO route. Both schools did, surprisingly, to get some guys that can maybe come in and make an impact even earlier than some of the freshmen. But, it's the usual suspects in the Big 12 in Texas and Oklahoma.
And, yeah, and of course, we will look at the Pac-12 and the SEC, who are just all over this top 25. But losers in the Big 12, anyone stand out?
I would say Kansas. I think even Kansas State didn't really monopolize the year that they had. I think it's so tough to recruit up there, but they really didn't do a great job. I think especially Kansas, it depends on if you want to count the two quarterback transfers, as part of this year, but outside of that, there's not a lot of talented guys coming to Kansas.
So in the Pac-12, we've got USC at 9, Stanford 10, Cal 15th, UCLA 18th, Oregon 19th, Washington 24th. Great year for the Pac-12. Who stands out as a winner?
Yeah, it was a strong year out west, maybe the most talented year out west in a long, long time, and I think the Pac-12 took advantage. I mean, Stanford's a huge winner with what they were able to do. I mean, when was the last time you even talked about Stanford on signing day? And now they land a top 10 class, five-star offensive, two five-star offensive linemen, another guy that could be considered a five-star guy. Just an impressive job by David Shaw and them. And then USC, I mean, it wasn't quantity with the sanctions and whatnot, but it was certainly quality. I mean, they landed five top 100 guys and a few others that were right on the fringe, and grabbing guys like Nelson Aguilar and Leonard Williams. I mean, those are guys that can possibly play early and play often. It's not a the knock on USC used to be, oh, you're never going to play with all those five-star guys. Well, you know what? You're going to play going forward with their depth situation, and some of those guys can make an impact, like Nelson Aguilar. I think he's a guy that can come in, play right away at wide receiver, running back. They can move him around. You saw what Marquise Lee did last year as a freshman and the year before that with Robert Woods, and he just really adds to that class. Solid year for them. And then I think UCLA and Washington. A lot of people didn't expect Jim Moore to recruit like this, but his assistants, Demetrius Martin and Adrian Clem, did a great job this year in grabbing talented guys. Jordan Payton is a very nice wideout. I think that fits their system. And grabbing Ellis McCarthy, I think there are so few big-time defensive tackles on the West Coast that anytime you can grab those type guys like Ellis McCarthy and UCLA did, that's a program changer, I think, especially on defense where they need a lot of help along that defensive line. But solid year for them. And then Washington, I think as good as classes they got, with guys like Shaq Thompson, the number 5 overall guy, and Siler Miles, they reeled in Tosh Lupoi, the assistant coach, and that was their best pickup of the offseason. So they're definitely a winner.
How about losers?
It was really just such a solid year in the Pac-12.
Everybody's a winner.
Everybody was a winner except for Cal. I think losing Tosh Lupoi, losing what should have been a top 10 class with guys like Ellis McCarthy, who flipped to UCLA, Shaq Thompson, who flipped to Washington.
Yeah.
And then, Eric Armstead, who was going to commit to Cal and enroll early and play on the basketball team. But, he's going to Oregon now. So it's
one thing to lose players. It's another to lose them in conference.
In conference. and that used to be the kind of the knock on USC is, they were losing guys in conference and it ended up hurting them. You know, guys like DeAnthony Thomas. And that was Cal this year. They lost guys in conference. And it's going to come back to bite them. And it definitely ratcheted up, I think, the fan pressure on Jeff Tedford going into 2012.
SEC, we have two in the top 10, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in the top 25. Alabama 1, Florida 5, South Carolina 11, LSU 13th, A&M 14th, Georgia 20, Tennessee 21, Auburn 22. So, wow. Pack our SEC winners.
Well, I think anytime you have that many teams in the top 25, everybody has a pretty good year. But, Alabama obviously finishing with the top class in the country. I mean, that's just a huge thing for them. And Florida, they missed out on some guys, especially late on signing day, guys like Nelson Aguilar, who they needed. They did really well in the state of North Carolina. They added DJ Humphreys, Jafar, some other top guys in the state of Florida. They got their running back. They got some pieces in this class, I think, that can play pretty early and did very, very well, even though they didn't really finish the season like they wanted to. But good year for the Gators. I think it was, as much as it was a banner year, it was pretty big for the newcomers. I mean, A&M finishing with the top 15 class, guys like quarterback Matt Davis coming in early. I think he could play in certain situations and really, maybe mix things up in that new quarterback race with a new head coach and a new system. We'll see what he can do. Some speedy guys. I think they were solid on the offensive line and defensive line. So good class for the Aggies. And anytime Missouri can land, landing the going into the SEC and landing the number one recruit in the nation, that's huge.
Losers in the SEC. We'll wrap it up here, Brian, and then you talk about the non-BCS schools quickly. But, yeah, SEC losers.
LSU, I think everybody expected a lot more losing Gunnar Keel at the last second. I mean, a guy like Avery Johnson's going to play early. He's a terrific talent, Patrick Peterson's younger brother. But didn't really close like how they should have. I mean, losing Tashiro Davis late to Texas, I mean, that's something you really didn't see in the past. But, it's still a very solid class for them, just not what it should have been. And then I think, even though they're in the top 25, Georgia, Tennessee, and Auburn all lost guys that they really needed. Georgia had to hit on all of their targets. They missed out on a couple like Avery Young. Auburn, I mean, they were, that was a true boom or bust class for Auburn. I mean, the guys like Eddie Goldman, they had to have, and they were kind of counting on them. They did land Avery Young, it still was very surprising that Auburn only landed 19 guys and only four were in the top, top 100. I mean, if you'd asked me 2 months ago, would they end up with a top 10 class, and I would have said yes, and now they're at 22. So that gives you some kind of indication. And then Tennessee, I think all things being relative, I think Vanderbilt had a better class than Tennessee, and they didn't really land any of those elite guys, no guys in the top 100, some solid pickups like tight end Justin Meredith, but not quite the year you would expect from a program like Tennessee.
And finally, the non-BCS schools?
Winners, I think Boise State. I think that this is one of their best recruiting classes. It could have been a little better. They lost some guys as some bigger BCS programs came up. But, I think Nick Patty's a terrific quarterback. He's a smaller guy. If he had been 2 inches or 3 inches taller, he would have been a five-star guy recruited by every program in the country. He's got a strong arm, smart kid, knows how to make all the throws. I think that's a tremendous pickup. They got some linemen. I think they're more of the talented guys, and just a good year for them.
Brian, you're the man.
Appreciate it.
Take a vacation, huh?
That's, I gotta find out when I can do that.
Well, I'm sure you'll be flying back to the West Coast soon, right?
Absolutely, going on back on Saturday.
Enjoy
it. It's gonna be fun, though.
Try to fight the jet lag, and we will talk to you soon. That's Brian Fisher, our Eye on College Football recruiting and Pac-12 blogger. I'm Adam Azer. We'll talk to you next week.